On the podcast today, we're joined with Dr. John Buckley and Aunty Dr. Mary Martin, and they join us in studio to talk about how they walk and work together to pioneer change in the landscape of medical and cultural education. This was a really beautiful and powerful episode and actually made me tear up a little. I hope you enjoy it.
Indigenous Health Med Talks with Dr. Danielle Arabina, yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians, Yuggera and Turrbal people, from where Dr. Danielle is broadcasting, and extend our acknowledgement to the elders past and present of all our listeners.
Hello and welcome. It's Dr. Danielle Arabina here, and we're back again for season three of the Indigenous Health Med Talk. And I'm joined in studio today with the lovely, I'm going to call her Aunty Dr. Mary Martin, and my boss, I have to be nice to him, John Buckley from GPTQ. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Danielle, and thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to start with Mary Martin because everyone's already heard John before. And season two, I think it was. So, Aunty Mary Martin, you were awarded a doctorate last year in 2019, and you've done amazing things. I was just reading through a little article on yourself before the podcast, and you started as a nurse back in the 70s at the Mater Hospital. So, you were the only Aboriginal nurse going through with your group at the time, or the first Aboriginal nurse,
no.
Just going through with your group?
Yes.
At the Mater?
Yes.
And has been a leader in establishing a lot of different community groups and governance groups in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health. So happy to have you come and be with us today, Mary. And I'd just love to hear a little bit about your story and who's your mob and where you're from.
Thanks, Danielle and John. So a little bit about myself is I was the middle child of a group of seven. My mum was from Springshaw, northwest Mount Moffat, up near Carnarvon Gorge, but registered in Springshaw at the time. And they were moved, half of them to Woorabinda, the darker skinned ones, and the other half of the family to Cherbourg. So I always grew up thinking Cherbourg was where my mum was from. It wasn't until decades later that I realised, because she never talked about it, is that that wasn't, you know, the real history of what had happened, found out much later. And my dad's from Minjeriba, Kundamooka, so Noonuccal man, and always grew up knowing where he was from, that was his traditional, homelands, bloodline to country. So my family, we go home every year to, life gets busy. We need to go home for that body, mind and spirit healing. Yeah. So nursing, thanks to Danielle for mentioning the honorary doctorate from the Queensland University of Technology. It was indeed a surprise because I don't think you realise what you do,
I think that's true. Yep.
Until you start to think, wow, I did do that. And I'm blessed that I'm still doing work, on behalf of the community, not on behalf of community, but to improve the life of, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in our communities. So I work with the Queensland Aboriginal Health Council. I was involved when it was formed back in early 1990. There were seven Aboriginal Community and Child Health Services in Queensland who formed those, Queensland Aboriginal Islander Health Forum, and starting up in the north was Cairns and Innisfail, Townsville, Mackay, was that four? Brisbane, Ipswich and North Stradbroke Island. Mm. So I was working at the medical centre then. But I probably jumped a bit there because...
Can I just jump in? Can you tell me, So a young lass growing up on the beaches of North Stradbroke, is that where you grew up?
No.
Or you came across to...
I was there when I was two.
Two.
And I don't remember much.
Yeah. But as a young girl, what encouraged you to become a nurse?
Well, to be honest, I didn't have any desire to be a nurse. Mm-hmm. It was something that I thought I could do. But I did receive a One People of Australia League scholarship to attend Brisbane Girls Grammar School.
Oh.
And they'd had a vocational careers day there towards, must have been in sixth form then, and knew that university was out of the reach simply because of, you know, money. And we lived in a housing commission home out of Denala there, so they never crossed my radar. And I got to be a doctor anyway.
Yeah.
But you're certainly through a different circuit. But my cousin, she always wanted to be a nurse. So I didn't have any of those desires or wishes. It was just something I thought I could do. And part of the exercise at the vocational careers day was to write away to the particular, you know, university or institution and apply.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, bugger me dead, did that and heard back and I was accepted. So it, I hadn't planned. I guess my life's never been one around planning years in advance. I guess it's been in the living and the now.
Yes.
Yeah, it makes sense. It, so, yeah, went off to, actually I didn't, my mum took me by the hand to go to the Mater Hospital because I probably wouldn't have went.
Mm-hmm.
So
it, how think, old were you then?
Oh,
probably. Without giving your age away. A lady never gives their age away.
I would give it away. You might do the math, eh? So, no, I think it was about, well, straight out of girls' grammar, so finished sixth form in the end of the year, and that I started nursing in the January of the next year.
So about 17, 18.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say worldly-wise or anything, or, you know, but just young, going to say young child, but young.
Young.
A girl, not a woman, but knowing that I was Aboriginal and was the only Aboriginal person in their student group and enjoyed, loved nursing. I guess it just the things just kind of happen and you're in the right place, I think. So, you know, I don't know
what you call it. Can I add to that, Mary Erica? What I love listening to that is really what happened was you put your hand up and someone said, yeah, have a go. And that's actually what you do. People like to think of those things sometimes as luck and right place, but, yeah, you put your hand up and I reckon there's lots of times you put your hand up and you're knocked back as well.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you keep putting your hand up for all sorts of things. And nursing was one of them.
Yes.
And I'm going to add my little spiritual wheel in there that I actually think that, you know, quite sometimes the universe is directing us to where we're meant to be. And for you, Mary, to, you know, be guided by your mother into that space and, you know, going through what she went through, it must have been, you know, like their places, hospitals are often places that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have reluctance to go to.
Yes.
And for her to hand over more or less her very precious daughter to that sort of institution shows me her vision in you and how you could like change people's lives.
Well, it was mum and dad.
Both of them.
Yeah, well, mum physically took me by the hand and I think you're absolutely right. But who thinks of that when you're 17 and you're, you know, starting off on a new venture?
She was more scared than you.
Yeah.
Well, just going near a hospital.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was a big thing. So
yes.
Then you started on, how long were you a nurse for in the hospital?
Well, I was at 71, so I started working at the Aboriginal Medical Service in the January. A lot of things have happened in January, actually, in my life. Yeah, at the Brisbane Aboriginal Islander Community Health Service. So we were at a little fruit shop in Red Hill there then. Because my cousin said, why didn't I come work in the Aboriginal Medical Service? Because there were two Aboriginal nurses there. She was one of them, and Dr. Pamela Mam was there, who'd set the, you know, the clinic up. And I didn't know what she was talking about. But I thought it was something that I could do. Never
see.
Planning.
Yep.
Yeah. So I did and loved that too. And just learned more about the, I suppose, not so much the political side. I didn't understand things that were happening, but all I wanted to be was a nurse. So the awareness raising, and I always knew I was Aboriginal, but the awareness raising of what that meant to be an Aboriginal person working in health certainly didn't happen in the hospital, but I knew I was an Aboriginal person working in the hospital. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the political, you know, the history and how the medical service got established came much later because of my naivety. Didn't understand it, what I was a part of.
Yes.
But was very lucky that Dennis Walker, he was the coordinator there at the medical centre at the time, and, you know, I certainly... I suppose my journey to PAM in terms of being the leader of the health service and nurturing, you know, us young, you know, Aboriginal nurses, through to work in that environment, you know, to help with Pam as well, because she had the vision around what, you know, it should and could look like. But then learning from Dennis too in terms of his vision around the political activism, you know, side of life for Aboriginal people, you know, at the time. But I probably didn't realise, you know, and sometime later that they're interlinked, the, you know, Aboriginal health and Torres Strait Islander health and politics are inseparable. And that's the way of, that's what we are aware of. But if you're not aware of it, you won't be able to recognise why things are happening or not happening in the way that they should happen, and we continue to struggle, and even today, to argue, you know, about the rights and needs of, you know, Aboriginal people across the whole breadth and depth of the land.
And I think, you know, maybe some people who are listening to this around the world would actually see similarities in their health. And so that you, I love what you said, that you cannot separate Indigenous health, for want of a better word, or First Nations health from the politics. And it's something that's, you know, we have been separated from our power and our sovereignty and our spirituality because of policies and government policies. And so having people like yourself as trailblazers to help us bring that power back to us, bring our sense of spirit and our wholeness and the connection back to us is something I'm so grateful for. I'm sitting here like nearly tearing up, and I can feel the energy like when you're talking of your story, because I know how difficult it is to work in a hospital, and I've came into the hospital system a long time. I was a nurse back in the day. Shout out to Greenslopes Hospital, where I was a worked on the surgical ward predominantly. But I just found it really challenging and difficult to be in that space. And so for having someone like yourself being back there when I imagine things were a lot more closed and more difficult, and the racism was more inherent and more ingrained.
I believe those leaders at the time certainly would have been more aware and managed, I suppose, to keep the doors of the medical service open, even, you know, when it, I think there was a deliberate fire set in the clinic, but that wasn't in my time. But, yeah, it sometimes actions do speak louder than words, unfortunately. But the strength, and I think, well, in the resilience, you know, it's a good word, and the support of, you know, non-Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people, students from University of Queensland, doctors who are out there now too, who long friendship with in terms of I wasn't there but they were there. But just knowing the history is a good place to start in terms of the understanding and the recognising, the recognition around why things have happened, and are still a testament to the strength of our elders and all of those, you know, people who've gone before us. And, yeah, for those, for the medical service, you know, the Brisbane Medical Service to still be here today, it's a community, recognise it as their own and can go there and get treated fairly and equally. And, you know, if they don't, then you've got a voice to be able to say why not.
Yes.
So, but knowing that you're reflected in those services, but it is good to be a part of something that starts out as an idea.
Yes.
You know, and then to be a part of its formation, you think, wow, gosh, was that really 20 or 30 years ago, Angel?
And that's how...
Coming up 50 years.
Wow.
Isn't it?
Wow.
Early 70s.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not really good at math.
So, Arnie, from your journey working as a Aboriginal nurse in the health centre, or medical centre, you sort of then transitioned, or did you think you could have a go at Quake, or like, you know, like that idea, like as you were saying before, you thought you could do it and you did?
Oh, yes.
Or you were tapped on the shoulder?
Well, there was, I guess, things that happened out of my control and I thought, oh, we'll see you later. Well, that wasn't certainly the medical centre, that was another environment. So my pathway did divert me down to the Aboriginal Medical Service in Redfern. So I spent 6 months there doing a National Aboriginal Community Control Health Organisation consultancy about the feasibility to establish an Aboriginal health worker forum. So we're talking 96. So that was a good opportunity, and to be supported by the CEO, Naomi Myers, at the AMS there. And she was also the deputy chair of the national organisation. So I think when your paths cross with somebody of such greatness, you guess you either had things in common with them or you don't, and you do work together, walk together along that journey. Mm. And I think it's people like Naomi and Sally Blair that... and Dennis Walker, and, you know, his mum or Drew, and there's probably too many to list, but I guess in the terms of this context here, it would be, you know, John Barclay, without realising it.
I was actually going to bring that up because I love that you said that you walk and work together along the journey.
Mm.
And I've always noticed the lovely relationship you and John have, Arnie, and I'd love to know how that blossomed and how you've just had this really mutual respect for each other's work. And tell me, John, so when did you first see young Mary?
Mary's influence started before I knew it, because when she was doing that work she just described, she worked on the curriculum for general practice. Which I was then tasked, along with a colleague of mine, Michael, to deliver. But our meeting starts to me with a story of a bit of courage from someone else. My boss at the time, Dr. Mary Marney, I think very bravely said, we're going to have all of our senior educators and herself go and do a 3-day Binangunj course when we were busy and we didn't know what it was about. And she committed to that. As far as I knew, she was the only one nationally doing that straight up.
Yes.
And 6 or 7 of us went along and committed 3 days, and I walked out knowing Mary, but reflecting. And so since then, we then had to implement and deliver, and Michael actually had responsibility that first, mm-hmm. but then I took over and he worked a bit with Cindy Shannon, mm-hmm. and then Mary and I really have worked with that since. So we've work together, and the work doesn't matter so much as what you said, Danielle, the relationship. And the one thing, out of all the everything else, that the thing that Mary has taught me most, and I think we have mutually come to understand most, is what real partnership is. And I think people talk a lot about partnering across cultures and people, but partnering is the things in Reconciliation Action Plan. It is respect, it is relationship, but it's also, you know, if Mary doesn't agree with me, she tells me and I listen. And then if I still don't agree, she listens back and we sort it out.
Mm.
But we've got the common goal in mind, and that's what the partnership is. That's what the working together is.
Mm.
We both know what we want to get, and it's the same thing.
Mm.
And we have to learn from each other to do it, and we share that. And I think that's where the strength of it is. And along with that has come enormous amounts of trust. And I've told the story a few times of when Mary really demonstrated her trust in me. And just briefly, there was the time when early on we would invite Mary, and we were just talking before about we went down to Government House in Canberra and gave a talk breakfast to the politicians one day. But everywhere Mary went, she said, I need another Aboriginal person to come with me. And look, I didn't understand that.
Mm.
We conceded to it. Mary Marnie agreed to that, and we let it happen. Eventually one day, I don't know how long it took me, I asked and said, hey, Mary, we've come to this thing. Would you like us to invite someone else? Which I'd never done. I don't know why. And Mary got it. And she actually said to me that day, no, John, you'll do fine. And to me, that was a watershed thing, that I actually finally understood enough that you shouldn't have to ask me. I should understand that you needed it. And that was the moment when you accepted that, yeah, I could be a support to you without being from your culture, but enough for you to feel safe. And I think that was... that was a really big moment. You may not even remember that, Mary, but that was really big for me.
Wow. I guess we don't go around talking about the mechanics of things. Mm. Is that the right word? Yeah. You know, just hearing you say that, yeah, didn't realise.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm a slow learner. You know, it took me quite a while to think, that's embarrassing to have to ask all the time. Why should she have to ask us? We should know. And that's where partnership is. That's where the respect is. It's coming from, you can't know the other, but it's coming from trying to know the other and acknowledging when you don't and realising when you don't. And Mary does the same with me, you know, that she defers to me on things and says, look, you know, I think this is right, wrong, whatever, but it's John's call and I'll go with it. And if she does, she backs me. You know, if she doesn't agree, she'll let me know before she backs me. But then she backs me because we talk it out. And I think it's that part of the relationship that I think you see, that when we just see each other, you know, it lights up and it's fun and it's there. But there's a lot of deep care. And the other bit I've got from this, I fly along on Mary's coattails. So, you know, I remember being in the park celebrating Mary's membership of the Audi Australia. I was privileged to be at her doctorate ceremony last year with QUT. I'm thrilled to have had Mary on the RACGP as an honorary member, but as honorary provost of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander faculty. They're things that are really important to me, and she's allowed me to be part of that. And I see those as important. She knows I see them as important. And she gets recognition that she is always surprised by. I'm not so surprised by it, but we share in it, and she allows me to share in that. And just what you said before about Danielle, about paving the way. Now, actually, probably the greatest moment of the dinner at QUT last year was, it was a ceremony also for all the Indigenous students. And there was three ladies being really honoured in different ways. And all of the ones, all of the young ones there, they had personally felt this feeling of people who had, these women had paved the way for them. And I think that has come home to me that night more than it ever has before as well. I mean, you're already referring to it just from your own experience. But there are these leaders, elders, especially women, who have paved a way, particularly when you think the area of health, but across a whole lot of education. And, yeah, and I looked at the young ones that night and thought, isn't that fantastic?
Because it's the eldership that we can look forward to. And there's also that, you know, the struggles are different in every generation.
Yep.
As I say to my patients, you know, like what I experienced as a 15-year-old kid is not the same as your kids experiencing. We've got phones, we've got technology, we've got a lot of different stresses. And that's the same for our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as well. So, you know, when Auntie Mary was a young lass and then got out into the medical service, she looked to people, elders, and so we are doing the same. And it's, you know, I think it's a really beautiful thing. And I often think it's like eldership is actually like you're turning around and you're putting your hand out and you're helping someone over an obstacle. You know, like we're not just saying, fuck you, work it out yourself. It's like, come on, I'll help you. And so people like yourself, John, who, and for listeners who don't know John Buckley, he is identifies as a,
you take, John, non-Indigenous, Irish.
As an Irishman.
He tells amazing jokes.
I didn't start to understand or recognise my Irishness, though, until I was in my 40s. You know, family was my nuclear family. My distant family and heritage became important as I got older. And then I wanted to learn more about it. You know, and I guess there's a lot of people in a lot of cultures who are that way. That there comes a time of needing to know more about who you are.
So how did you feel after you started, John?
Oh, it's exciting and
it
interesting.
Is,
and I always knew my granddad was a bit of a rebel.
Yes.
He'd live with us when I was a kid, but he'd never talk about the stories because they were too grim.
Yes.
You know, the Civil War in Ireland in the 1920s was terrible.
Actually.
He wouldn't speak about it.
And that's a good point in terms of, you know, Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander patients in terms of speaking about their life that they've... in some instances, have survived, but it's still hurting.
Yes, absolutely. There was this one day every year my granddad would stay in his room and not talk to anybody, you know, and it was relating to a particular event in his life, and that was 60 years on.
I'm watching you both looking at each other as you're talking, and I can see the beautiful relationship you have. So how does that translate into training our registrars and our GPs? So tell us a little bit about how you both work together to support each other and, you know, change the mindset of our registrars.
Oh, I put that all down to John.
And I'm sure he would put that down to you.
it is symbiotic, though, and there's two parts of it. I actually think we work well in the presentation space. Mary gives me room and I rely upon her expertise. And so I do the facilitating and draw Mary and she gives the group what they need. But we also reflect before and after. And there's been sometimes in sessions when I'm there, but particularly sessions where I'm not there, where Mary's had some very challenging situations. And she always comes for a debrief. And we and often we'll get a real aha moment about what happened. And you know, I respect sometimes what Mary's trying to deliver is particularly challenging when confronted by people in the room. And Mary is amazing at absorbing that, but every now and then it's too much. And it's often when there's other stuff going on in life. Yeah. And if you leave an Aboriginal or an older person unsupported in that education space, then you've got a problem. And we've had some instances of that. And other times, even when supported, it's hard. So I think it's that understanding of what we each bring, you know, and also both of us accept we don't know everything, and we're there to guide people to learn rather than teach them stuff, I reckon.
Yes.
You know, we're giving them the chance to reflect and learn and talk and add into that. And I think we both have, even though very different style, we both have that philosophy of, you know, well, you're going to come into the room and you're going to go out having learned what you learned, and we're going to have done our best to make that something good. And if it doesn't happen, we'll talk later and see if we could have done better. But some people just aren't ready.
Yes.
You know, and we accept that.
I mean, that's right. You both teach a sort of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander or Aboriginal health in different segments, and the problem with that is that everyone has to do it, whereas my immersions are people self-select. So it's only very rarely that I'll have those confronting sort of things. And when I do, it's very hard. And so for listeners who mightn't work in the education space being an Indigenous person, it can be challenging because we're talking about trauma that's happened in our families, and it might very well be happening in our families still. We're talking about stolen generation, but, it, you know, our children are still being stolen from us in a different way. And so it's very different to how medical educators. Medical educators get to, and they have a buffer. They get to talk about, you know, blood pressure medication and, and heart disease. And it's very rarely that it impacts on them in such a profound way. And I think it's really important for listeners. What you said, John, was so important, that it's we need to have support when we're bearing our souls open and airing all of our hurts and our wounding, that we are not being attacked in that room.
As you do at immersions and with staff, Danielle. You know, it's a very vulnerable space that people don't acknowledge. I think the other thing we share, Mary, is that we're both pretty good at having a long-term view of things, as exhibited by nearly 50 years of the AMS. But, you know, we don't measure, like, what's the feedback of this workshop? We look at what are we achieving overall over time? Are we getting better? And often, you mentioned the segments, often by the end of segment three, the feedback is far more interesting and understanding than in segment one. And that's really hard in a lot of education institutions where it's, you know, your feedback's no good. You know, I accept some of the feedback for segment one isn't always great, but it's those same people at the end of segment three that are writing amazing reports about their visits.
Yes.
And they're getting it. And I think we say it's not everybody and it's not immediate. We get people nudge along a path, they understand, they get a moment, they hear something from a peer when Mary gets them to read out bits of their report.
Yes.
And that's going to sink in. And we both take that view that we're just trying to get everybody moving along. We're not really worried about getting, you know, 100% ratings for everything we do. It's not the goal.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, our cultural education has moved from that ticker box where you've done your three-hour workshop in Aboriginal health, so now you're an expert.
Yep.
We acknowledge that we're all, it's a continuum, and we're all on an individual journey. So it's lovely to know that, you know, sometimes, as you said, like at the beginning, people are confronted and people are like, I don't want to learn this. What have I got to learn this for? And you come up against those barriers and you're bashing it. But to have the patience and the, you know, temperance to watch that journey evolve, I think is lovely.
And doing that together, I think that's a really hard thing for anyone to do on their own.
So I would have thought, you know, back certainly in the late 90s, it was a bit like the bell's curve, you know, those to the right, those to the left, those in the middle there. And certainly it's more noticeable, you know, the most recent workshop probably a couple of weeks ago. Was it a couple of weeks? It was only last week. The mindset and the attitude of the registrars coming through, they were quite an inspirational group. Certainly, you know, there was a handful of them who were really good and keen and motivated to share their experiences with the group in the room. But there have been workshops where you get the odd registrar who's, you know, done it all, knows it all. Okay, that's fine. But then their attitudes and their comments will be, you know, to the negative or, you know, derisive of that. And that's where I'll talk to either John or the medical educator and say, what's his story? You know, and just debrief there and then, which is, I think we've been fortunate in that we've, we didn't set a schedule or a plan. This is my interpretation now, my experience. We didn't set a schedule or a plan as to how we were going to do the optional health, you know, training. But yeah, things have happened where, as John said it before, we were both wanted the same, you know, for the, so that the, you know, it was a good, you know, educational experience for the registrars. And my recollection was is that I said to you fellas at the training program that if it was good enough for me to do a Binungunch cross-cultural, you know, workshop, then it should be good enough for you fellas. Which gave us a common platform only because, as John said earlier, that, you know, his boss, Dr. Mary Marnie, heard. So if it had been somebody other than Mary, the relationship as such would not exist, see? So it's that listening and the hearing thing, and it's a good place to start. And as John said too, you know, the Queensland faculty were the only faculty at that time, and it was there in black and white in the training module, you know, partnership with Aboriginal people. So that's where that history then has was key, I believe, in terms of setting a solid foundation. And out of that has grown, see, I haven't thought of it as a relationship, I just thought it as John.
But it certainly is, and there is a partnership and there is a very strong foundation.
And I love hearing him say that too, because you don't realise the things. For me, it's just common sense. It's been a big learning experience for me in terms of training. So when I first did the workshops, there were certain things that, you know, I had a right, I believe, to expect, and one of them was not using mobile phones. Hey, remember that was that last century?
Yep.
So, but these days, I guess I've realised that some people are attached at the hips to their mobile phones.
It's our brain. And, it's our brain in our hand.
And well, I know I've got children like that too. So I've got to realise that, all right, well, you know, if you're going to use the mobile phone, you know, just share with the group what you're, you know, looking up, because there might be other people in the room who'd be interested as well. But I can remember at the training program there in Buranda, and it might have been a few years after we'd started, is, you know, I said to the group that the group kept getting younger and younger. They looked younger and younger. And I realised it wasn't the group at all, it was me. I was getting older and older. So that there, you know, and like it wasn't a big thing. But I think just that realisation of self in terms of, you know, space. But it was that they weren't getting younger at all, it was actually me. So that was quite a revelation that it was good to make. There you go. Yeah, in terms of, but certainly in terms of having medical educators in the workshop, you know, GPTQ needed to own the issue that these registrars were, all registrars were enrolled here, and that there were certain things in terms of what they needed to take responsibility for, and that was the behaviour of their registrars. And, yeah, there was that incident. I was very fortunate that there was a medical educator. She said to me, look, I've got some work to do. Do you mind if I sit down the back? And I said, no, no, you're right. So I knew she was there. So there was a particular activity. Well, they might have ganged up on me, for want of a better word. I could have rephrased it better. But thank God the medical educator was listening. I said to her, you didn't, that you could, do you mind? So, because they were getting blocked. So, you ever talk to a group of blocked? So I thought, oh, well, because that was the first activity in the workshop.
Yeah.
I hadn't even got the morning tea. So, but it was particularly important. So, one of my expectations, and I think GPTQ or John, you know, yeah, there's always two medical educators in the group. Haven't needed them to the extent of that initial thing, which is good. So it was a safeguard. So we didn't plan for that to happen, but as a result of that incident, you know, that situation. Yeah, and also the medical educator. So I talked to the medical educator about what it was that I could have done definitely, or memory, that's what I recall. But she might have given me advice around that educational thing, because it had to be a positive learning experience and also, you know, one for the educator too.
And that's the thing, you know, with education, you always have to come back and reflect and say, yes. You know, how could we, is there something we could do differently? What caused this situation to occur? And as you said, like, it's no use if everyone gets blocked at the start of the day, because what you're going to be doing sitting there twiddling your thumbs, or everyone's going to be on their phone, you'll all be like doing Facebook updates or something. Well, thank you so much. Is there any final words? We're coming to a wind-up.
I just wanted to add on that. I think another thing that's important just generally, Mary does, but is sometimes it's more important to challenge people and make them uncomfortable enough to learn rather than just give them stuff and be liked. And I had the experience one day, and I won't say it was, but we had a couple of workshops going on at the same time, and I sat with Mary in the morning and the other person in the afternoon. And Mary actually had a bit of a rough start and challenged people a bit. And then the other person was lovely and everybody really liked her. And the feedback probably reflected that, but I know the people in Mary's room learned more because they were put in a position to have to think, why is this woman asking us these things? Why is she challenging us? And they moved. The people in the other room sat and pleasantly listened. And you know, if we're really talking about learning, you've got to get people in a position to learn. And sometimes that puts you at risk. Sometimes it doesn't quite work. But if you don't do that, you risk missing the learning opportunity completely. And you know, that's where, the support and the feedback. So that's the thing I wanted to finish on.
Thank you. Mary, any final words?
Well, just in follow-up of that, I know exactly what he was talking about, but not the minute and the hour. But I go by the level of interaction and the sharing of experiences from those, you know, the doctors in the room there. And I tell them up front there that that's the strength of the workshop, is because not everybody has the same experiences, and could be the person sitting beside you scores low or could be high. And it's just, I still enjoy doing it actually. How many registrars do you reckon I've trained?
We're between 50 and 180 a year over 20-something years. So if we average that at 100, that's about 2,000.
Wow. So, I don't think of it in terms of numbers. I actually think of it in terms of workshops, because I'm always keen to meet, new people. And it's also an opportunity for me to keep my ear to the ground in terms of if there's a particular registrar who might want to work in Aboriginal Health.
Give them a little tap on the shoulder, little gold star beside their name.
Yes, so that's probably it for me,
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining today, and I really loved the way that this conversation evolved and some lovely storytelling, but also the deep respect and partnership. And I think that there's a lot of things that we can learn about in how we support each other in the difficult places as well. So thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll see you in the next, or we won't see you, you can hear me and whoever else is my guest on the next episode. Thank you.
That was a great work, Danielle.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.